Looking for the latest in B-School news? Want an international slant to it? Business Because may be just what you're looking for. Find out more today in this interview with its editor-in-chief. Welcome to the 317th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Hello, my name is Linda Abraham. I'm the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Today's featured resource is Accepted's upcoming webinar, Get Accepted to Stanford GSB, which I will present twice on July 10th. Learn the tested strategies for applying successfully to top MBA programs and see them applied to Stanford's MBA 2019-20 application. The webinar is free, but you do need to register. Save your seat today at accepted.com/317download. We have today a keen observer of the B-School scene, since our guest is Marco De Novellis, the editor of Business Because. After graduating from the University of Leeds, Marco joined Business Because as a journalist and community manager in 2015, where he has worked ever since. Since 2017, he has been the editor at Business Because and more recently the host of the Business School Question podcast. Along the way, he also wrote a book about the alumni of the Cheong Kong Graduate School of Business in Beijing and wrote for QS Top MBA and AACSB. Marco, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining me. How did you get your start on this whole B-School thing?
Yeah, good question. I guess I sort of fell into it slightly. So as you mentioned, I went to University of Leeds. I actually studied history. So writing has always been a passion of mine and wrote for the university paper and did a bit of freelance journalism. And so essentially, I just applied for a position that looked interesting at a small startup in central London and was lucky enough to get the job. So back then, when I actually joined Business Because, it was quite a small business. It started out in 2009, so 10-year anniversary this year. And when I joined, it was like 4-5 people, very startup-y. We shared a very small office. And now today, it's 15 or so of us. And it's been great to be on that journey. I've been very fortunate to be on that journey as well, which has developed my career and gone, as you said, from joining at a journalism stage to becoming the editor. So just really grew into the role and got to know the business school industry from there. And for those that don't know about Business Because, we're an online publisher we're dedicated to graduate management education. So we write content for anyone who's applying to business school, MBA, EMBA, masters. So the focus is really on prospective business school students. So through that lens, I've learned a lot about the application process and just about what it's like to go to business school. So it's been just 4 years, coming up to 4 years of learning from amazing people and sharing their knowledge and building up knowledge base of my own and really getting involved in the industry. And as I'm sure you all know, it's such a great industry with loads of options for stories to cover, especially for a publisher like us. Everything links back to business education, so there's loads of cool stories to cover out there. So answer to your question, I fell into it by accident.
When you were in kindergarten, when you were 5 years old, you didn't say, "I want to be a business school journalist."
No, I've got to say, I didn't say that. to be honest, before I joined, I didn't really know too much about graduate management education. You know, I was very focused on the arts, but it's like an opening of a whole new world. So it's been great.
Good. By the way, I also love history. I wasn't a history major, but I still read it. I love it. Now, you have, let's turn for a minute to your writing about China. Okay. You wrote that book, and I also see a lot of articles on Business Because written by you about China. I assume some of them are excerpted from the book. But what How did the book come about? Let's just start with that.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, the school, Chong Kong Graduate School of Business, so CKGSB, is China's leading private business school. So no interference from the state. And within China, it's very well known. Jack Ma, who's the founder of Alibaba, right, is an alum. And I think there's some stats about the alumni from the school collectively lead one-fifth of China's biggest brands. Wow. So huge in China, but not that well known outside of China. So the book came about because they really wanted to do something that was more than your standard brochure, to really show the benefits of studying in China for international students. And so they approached me, and they approached me through Business Because, and then asked me specifically to write it, which it was an honor, but also quite a big task. And so it was really fun, big project. I interviewed about 25 alums from this school, and some of them I met in person, and it's really delving into their personal stories and why they decided to go to China, how they profited from that experience. We had so many interesting stories. One person I spoke to used his final MBA project presentation. He was presenting to his class, and he used it to propose to his classmate.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
who stayed his wife. So that was
unique.
Yeah. And then just loads of entrepreneurs, people with amazing backgrounds. Also, Japanese students who studied in China, which is, really? Is a very interesting sort of angle. There's a lot of history between the two countries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of schools have these stories, but not everyone shares them. So it was really good to do that. It's a nice book, very nicely illustrated. Unfortunately, not available on Amazon. But but yeah, it was a good, fun, great project, and really learned a lot from that.
So and the purpose of the book was to introduce the school to non-Chinese, to attract more non-Chinese, and essentially diversify the student body. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's something a lot of Chinese schools are trying to do. It's a challenge for them attracting internationals, but increasingly they're looking to do that and looking to obviously have English language material to do those and that aspect of marketing, but also just share their stories. It's not, you know, a big advert. It is just telling real stories, and the fact that they all go to the same school, that's partly coincidental.
What are some of the challenges that Chinese business schools, even this private business school, face that European or US or other Asian schools don't face?
Yeah, well, I think the struggle to attract internationals, obviously US schools are facing that quite a bit at the moment. Yeah. And there's a whole, there's a whole visa issues and US political climate that comes into that. But the Chinese business schools face that even more so. And as I mentioned, it's sometimes a communication thing. A lot of them have huge reputations in China. They've never had to market internationally, so they're learning how to do that. And also, there haven't been that many international students in the past, so they need people to be pioneers, to take that step to study there and then serve as an example for others. But I mean, yeah, more specifically, the idea of government intervention is a bit of an issue. So we saw a clampdown on executive MBA programs recently.
Really?
And, there's a part of a wider clampdown on sort of elitism, potential corruption. So there was an idea that EMBA programs in China were sort of elite networking clubs for members of the Communist Party. So China's education ministry put a law in that students had to pass national entrance exams before joining EMBAs. So that obviously affected numbers of students and affected schools in China. So there are issues with government intervention, but I think Chinese schools have huge opportunities. We're seeing shifts in candidate preferences towards Asia, Chinese schools becoming more and more international, more and more developed, and it's certainly an exciting market, and there's so many opportunities there that I talk about in the book as well for entrepreneurship. You know, if you compare the US visa situation, which is quite difficult, to in China, where they have a special startup visa for anyone who registers their own company. If they're an international, they can apply to this visa and stay on. And obviously the huge potential market.
Oh, yeah.
And increasingly, knowing about China is not just useful in China, huge investments all over the world. And the Belt and Road project, which is a massive infrastructure development project along the old Silk Road trade route, there's so much opportunity to get involved with that. So we're talking, you know, Africa, into Russia, you know, wherever you are, knowing about China is going to be helpful. So challenges, but exciting time as well.
Okay. That was fascinating. Thank you. As it happens, I was just speaking to somebody yesterday. Now, he'd lived in China, I think, for 5 or 6 years, and he decided to come back, in this case, to the United States. And he was saying that it was the government was making it a little bit more difficult for expats in China in recent months, obviously partially in response to what's going on in the United States. But he decided as he put it, I don't know if it's going to get better. I don't know if it's going to get worse, but I decided it's time to come home. So he didn't want to stay and find out. But let's move away from China for a minute. What are some of the trends, interesting trends that you're seeing in business education today?
So there's a lot going on. So I guess I'll pick out a couple of them. There's obviously always digital disruption in every industry. And that's not new. And so business schools have more and more programs going online. There's also disruption from outside the sector. So, you know, companies, Amazon, Alibaba, getting involved in learning and particularly in executive education, how can business schools keep up with disruptors from outside? Then there's a whole shift away from MBA programs with more specialized masters, students wanting those shorter, more flexible degrees. But I think two trends that interest me most is the changing market, really. If we think about 10, 15 years ago, the Financial Times rankings, for example, were still really dominated by US schools. And now we're seeing more and more Asian and certainly European programs. And while numbers of people applying to business school are the same, so like 290,000, I think GMAC figures are each year, and those are pretty consistent, but they're applying to different places. So it's just so much more competitive for business schools, the marketplace. And looking at that shift and how it's going to continue is really interesting.
What do you attribute that shift to? I mean, there's multiple causes, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean, certainly some of the data shows that it's a long-term trend, but certainly shift away from the US has been exacerbated by political situation, because it's more difficult for internationals to find jobs in the US. And that's, you know, not just President Trump. It's also, long-term visa problems, the visa lottery, but also the increasing sophistication of programs elsewhere in the world. So obviously the US was the first place where business education started. The MBA is so strong there. And now Asia's catching up. We're seeing the Chinese economy develop and a growing middle class who have spending power, and so many businesses that have grown up and boomed because of the economic boom. But these people have practical skills, but maybe they don't have those business foundations. So business education is becoming more and more important in this incredibly fast-growing emerging market. And then in Europe as well, it's more and more sophistication, and master's programs have always been huge in Europe. And as master's programs become more popular generally, that's seen a shift as well. A number of things, I guess. But I'm always interested in the political climate and the impact that may have. But in terms of another trend, something we're also writing about is how the industry is shifting towards ideas around responsible management. So there's lots of if we take the rankings, for example, so there's lots of news and criticism about rankings, and we do our fair share of that.
We'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay, no worries. In terms of responsible management, there is this shift. So if we think just about students, more people want to make an impact, start their own businesses, and that is starting to be reflected within the industry with how business schools are teaching students, what they're focusing on. We have Amber launching a new accreditation, which the Business Graduates Association, which rewards schools based around things like sustainability and impact, which is slightly different to how accreditations have what they focused on before. So there is this sort of trend towards that. It's been a long time coming, and it's interesting to see how that's going to pan out.
It will be interesting to watch, and also how the marketplace rewards it. That's going to be really interesting to see. What do you think the implications of some of these trends are for applicants? I mean, I think we're kind of seeing the results of the trends and the increasing interest in European and Asian business programs and the somewhat declining interest in U.S. programs. But what do you think this is, some of the stuff means for applicants? That's your primary market.
Yeah, no, for applicants, it's positive because there's so much choice. There's so many programs out there. But it's also confusing because there's so much choice and so many programs out there. So choosing the right school for you, instead of choosing from 20 schools, you're now choosing from 200.
Instead of the top 10 or top 15 or those ranked 20 to 30 or something like that, choosing the right ones.
Exactly. So choosing the right school becomes more and more important. So I think going more and more on your individual career goals compared to the best name business schools is just more and more important. I know I should be an admissions consultant. when you have these big rank schools out there, that's great. But if you want to go and work in China, do an MBA in China, or do you go to business school in China, that's where it would make most sense to do that. I think the way the market's going is it's confusing for applicants, but I think it's also good because schools are really having to push themselves, market themselves to applicants. Business schools used to maybe select applicants, and now the applicants select business schools. So the power is with an applicant. They really, if they really stand out, if they really work on their application, then there'll be business schools fighting over them because they want diversity in the classes, and they can't always rely on filling those classes, especially when you get to the lesser well-known business schools.
It's interesting. U.S., as I'm sure you know, some business schools have closed their traditional program because they can't fill the class, very simply. That is part of the impact of the competition, both from online programs, I think, and from competition abroad, as well as all the trends that you very correctly identified. Now, Business Because was acquired about a little over a year ago. You're no longer just a tiny startup, right? You're now part of GMAC. How is that changing Business Because, and what do you see coming down the pike for Business Because?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's been, as someone who's been here from near to the start, it's been really, really positive for us. The core of what we do as a publisher hasn't changed. You know, we're independent on editorial. We write what we want. We still operate as a startup, fast paced. We innovate.
That's nice.
So that's great for us day to day. But in terms of the acquisition, having this organization behind you is just...
That must be great.
Huge benefits in terms of audience, our coverage, our capabilities, you know, the team. We're expanding all the time. We're always recruiting. In terms of our content, it sits not just on Business Because, it also sits on GMATsMBA.com. So that's where applicants go to register for the GMAT exam. And it's one of the most visited dedicated sites for graduate management education. So the visibility of our content is great. And something I'm quite excited about is working more with GMAT, with all the data that organization collects. So later this year, we're going to be looking at doing a report on the most popular countries in the world for business school applicants, where they're applying. So the US will no doubt still be the most popular, but it's interesting to look at shifts within trends. That data and trends, exactly, like some of what we spoke about, also speaking to candidates about their preferences. So we're leveraging that data. Obviously, on the more businessy side, you know, we do content marketing campaigns for business schools, and we're now working with some of the biggest name business schools on those. So great in terms of exposure, and personally, it's just moving from a startup environment to being part of one of the biggest organizations in the industry. I can't complain.
Right. How do you see business becomes as having a distinctive niche in the B school scene? I mean, you have, large publications like U.S. News, the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, Bloomberg Business Week. They all cover the B school scene on some level or another. You have smaller niche publications like Poets and Quants or some of the community communities like GMAT Club or Beat the GMAT, which also serve MBA and the MBA applicant market and the graduate management education market in general. What is Business Because's niche in your view? What is it adding to the marketplace?
I think what makes Business Because different, there are several things. So our content is very people-focused, people-centric. So people are at the center of all our stories. We think of ourselves as storytellers. So a lot of our content is based around, like the China book, these individual stories of students and alumni that we use to inform and inspire others to apply to business school as well. I guess how we're different from the FT and The Economist is our exclusive focus on graduate management education. How we're different from those more niche publications like ourselves, that people focus. Also, we're truly global, so yeah, both in terms of our audience and the content we create, while some others might be more US-centric. We're even covering emerging markets in Africa, Russia, Israel. I did an article talking to someone in Palestine about a startup accelerator they were starting in the Gaza Strip. So we're covering the world. I'd say we're not a new site as such, so we wouldn't report on, this professor's joined this school or this professor's had an affair with this professor. We more take a bit of a helicopter view. So a good example is INSEAD released its new Masters in Management recently. We didn't report that they did that. We looked into how the program was different, and so we had an interview with their program director to really come up with something that's really useful for our audience. And everything we do is about the applicant, so that we take a sort of champion of applicants approach, we like to call it. We're writing specifically for them, and the goal is always to support them on their journey to business school.
Okay. Well, that is a very distinctive approach. And even I realized my question, the publications I mentioned were all US-based questions, which probably reflects, where I'm located, but it's not even our client base. Our client base is international. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned rankings several times in the call, and MBA-dom is filled with rankings. There are more rankings for business school applicants than there are for law school applicants, for medical school applicants, or for any other category. What are the strengths and weaknesses of rankings as a whole in your view? And what about some of the specific rankings that you report on? Because you don't report on all, from what I could see.
Right. How long have you got? First of all, the strengths, they're incredibly useful tool in terms of the data that sits within them. So as long as you understand the limitations of that data, they can be hugely, hugely useful. You can compare schools, look deeper within a ranking. So to an extent, they're a useful source of something that applicants can use when considering different schools. But the obvious limitation is that you can't just look at a ranking and just take that as gospel. These are journalistic models that are designed to be different so that one publication stands out from another. So if someone's launching a new ranking, they're going to find a methodology that's going to throw up a different result to a ranking that's already out there. So you have to look into the methodologies. And so there lies some of the flaws with rankings. You know, how far do you trust how schools are putting these methodologies together? So we can start with the Financial Times. Financial Times gives a huge weight to an alumni survey. How can you really trust data that has such a bias as an alumni answering questions about their school? I can't see any alumni who would want to damage their own brand by saying that the school they went to was awful, and suddenly it drops out of the Financial Times rankings and they're left with something on their CV that doesn't look as good as it was before after they spent about $100,000 on that. So that can be an issue. You know, I've spoken with people at the FT, been on a panel and spoke about that, and they have lots of measures. The FT is the only rankings provider that I know of that sends in, I think it's KPMG, who do an audit of business schools to make sure the data they're collecting is correct. So, you know, it's my favorite ranking. It's great, it's global, but this alumni survey is a bit of a concern. And then the more general point, and this is how the industry might change, is the real focus on salary data. So across all rankings, really, the impetus is on jobs data, how much are alumni earning, a lot of weight is given to that. And so that's a problem in terms of if a business school is located in a country when wages are lower, then their graduates are going to earn less. Some schools have even complained that it detracts from recruiting women because women are paid less in certain industries. There are measures against this, but it's all pretty murky. And also the fact that business school isn't about just earning big salaries as much as it might have been in the past. So I think it's 25% of incoming students nowadays want to start their own business, and that's not going to pay you a big salary. How can the ranking look at that? People are interested in social impact, working for nonprofits. It's not all about getting jobs in finance firms and consulting firms anymore. So this is a bit of a problem for rankings, and there are changes that are coming with regards to that. And also we've seen how rankings can really be exploited or misguided. There's been a lot of scandals. Schools have been kicked out of rankings. How can you trust a ranking that's launched that, I think it's, you know, a few of the top ranked Financial Times schools aren't featured in? So I'm talking about the Wall Street Journal Times Higher Education ranking that launched, but big name schools decided not to take part in it because rankings, participating in rankings takes a lot of resources from schools. They were tired of doing that. They said, we're going to sit this one out. So that ranking needs a big disclaimer to say, by the way, these are our results, but there's all these schools that are missing from it. So as someone who is reading that ranking, you need to be aware of all the background information and all the methodology and all, everything that goes into it. So they can be misleading and they need to be looked at with these things in mind. Even today, or yesterday, there was a new report out from
I saw it actually just before I came on your site.
Yeah, so exactly. I think we headlined something like business schools say MBA rankings can't be trusted. So it's quite sensational. But new data from the Association of MBAs, which surveyed business schools. I think it's 1 in 10 said that rankings reflected the true performance of their MBA programs. Now, that's probably a lot of business schools who aren't well ranked. But there is something to be said that a ranking alone doesn't show everything about a program. We are working with a school now on a campaign for them who have a program that's ranked number one in the world. But they're attracting the wrong kind of students for them. They want to attract different kinds of students. GMAC calls them, GMAC segments the market, prospective students. And so they're attracting a lot of people that GMAT refers to as respect seekers, so people interested in this ranking. But they actually want to attract people who are global strivers, who want to work internationally, or impactful innovators, entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs. And they can't do that with ranking alone because it doesn't communicate everything about their program. So they're looking to share their stories. So rankings can be great. It can also be a bit of a curse, both for business schools and candidates. So lots of slightly less than positive, slightly less than strengths. But I mean, without the rankings, I'd have a lot less to talk about. So it's another strength.
I've for years said that the best thing about the rankings is the data that's in them. The rankings themselves, I mean, I think that the emphasis that applicants sometimes put on them reflects a laziness on their part. Because no ranking, I don't care what you do to it, is going to reflect the values, interests, needs, and priorities of individual applicants. It's impossible. That they have to figure out. So for the applicant that is pursuing an MBA to get into consulting because they want to make a lot of money, and there is that applicant out there, or investment banking, or they don't want to incur a lot of debt unless they're going to be able to pay it back. I don't think that's an illegitimate reason to be concerned about ROI. That's one priority and goal. And they should be looking at the data to determine which schools are going to give them that return with their specific goal in mind. Remember, you were talking about goals. On the other hand, if somebody has a goal of going into entrepreneurship or social enterprise, their goal is different. They either may be looking for the school that's going to give them the biggest scholarship and has the best reputation for launching people on startups. And it shouldn't, and that might be somebody that the school Babson, you know, in the United States, that is not overall as highly ranked, but is almost always very well regarded for entrepreneurship. So, you know, I think that the rankings to a certain extent encourage a certain laziness among applicants. And the applicants need to kind of take responsibility and use the data that they contain to make their own rankings. Because there's no ranking that's going to reflect the priorities and goals, needs of every single applicant. And that to me is the biggest flaw in any ranking. And I don't think it can be corrected for.
Yeah. But what we have seen is more specific focused ranking. So you have QS in the UK started ranking by specialization.
That
so
if I you're think interested,
Yeah. So that could be interesting. How far, you know, the data is reliable and all that, that's something else to think about. But
that's a different question.
Yeah, but if, say, there's rankings on sustainability, there's the Better World MBA rankings, and you're all about
Aspen.
Sustainability, then you can look there. But these sort of high level, these are the best business schools that, you know, what is best? And then and the rankings have decided that best is more weighted
this
about
percentage
salary.
Of GMAT score, this percentage of ROI, this, you know, it's our salary. ROI, I think, is actually a better measure than total salary.
And
salary.
It's you know, a bit of a vicious circle, and it can be damaging for business schools too, because I think the data is 80% of candidates consult rankings when researching schools. So schools know that they're important. So they have to cater to the rankings. So if they're asking for high GMAT scores, then schools have to try and get classes with high GMAT scores or do whatever they have to do around that. And if they're asking for high salaries, then schools have to focus their careers efforts on that if they want to be ranked highly. So it's a bit of a vicious circle, and it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. What I was going to mention was the reports that was at the World Economic Forum earlier this year, business school rankings for the 21st century. I'm sure you know all about it, but that really, for maybe the first time, really criticized the rankings, a real industry reaction, and talking about how they can move away from this focus on salary data to a focus on impact, and schools should be rewarded for that. So it's interesting to see how these things will play out. We've seen the FT, they introduced CSR into their rankings for the first time this year, and next year they're going to look at possibly changing the methodology completely for the first time. So it will be interesting to see the path that lies ahead, and that might see some schools shoot up and some schools shoot down.
Sure. Well, it'll increase volatility, to be sure. Can you tell us about your podcast, The B School Question?
I can.
That's your baby, so right?
Yeah, it is. I'm a big fan of podcasts myself. So always listening to one. Now even when I'm cooking or getting dressed in the morning, I've got something going on. I should take a bit of a break sometimes. But I just thought, you know, we need something at Business Because. People are busy. No one's busier than a business school applicant. You want to listen to things on the go. So we were sort of thinking, what can we do? There's a lot of podcasts out there. So we decided on this idea of the Business School Question, where we'd really discuss one of the big industry questions with an expert or panel, and really delve into it. So we've discussed things like, is an MBA worth it? Should you go to Europe or the US for your MBA? On International Women's Day, we did a panel with Alyssa Sangster from Forte Foundation. Sure. Mm-hmm. And Kelly McAnally, I think I'm pronouncing that right, who's a professor at Berkeley Haas. And the question was, do women work harder than men? To which the answer was yes. That was fun. So lots of great content there, and most of it is directed at prospective students, you know, all of it is really. Now we're looking a little bit more specific. So we spoke to an alum from Columbia Business School about his advice on getting into their EMBA program. We've got next one coming up about the Wharton MBA. It's been good fun. It's something we're trying to do more of, branch out into different medias and available on iTunes. Just go type in Business School Question or Business Because, and on our website as well.
Right. I listened to a couple of episodes. I thought it was excellent. I thought you asked very good questions, tougher questions than I tend to ask. That's probably your journalism training. Do you have any last words of wisdom for applicants, since obviously your focus is the applicants?
Last words of wisdom. I think my wisdom's all out. But I mean, it's just coming back to that point of the fact that applicants, I think, get very worked up about the application process and really try and paint a picture of themselves that they think business schools might like to hear. So they have to be this A grade, incredible type A personality who's always done incredibly and has got 800 on the Gmail or something like that. When in reality, business schools want diverse profiles. They want humans who have interesting things in their background. So I think the notion of that there's a school for everyone is definitely true. And really thinking about what really makes you unique as an applicant is much more important than going for the highest GMAT score you can, or always go for the highest GMAT score you can, but just obsessing over
right.
that. Writing an essay that you think they want to hear rather than just telling your true story. And the admissions committees are real people too. So it's like, in a way, when you go for, I mean, my experience of it is interviewing people for jobs at Business Because. If I sense that they're not telling the whole truth, or if I can't get a sense of their personality, then it's going to be more difficult to relate to them. I think it's similar. Obviously GMAT score is really important.
Yeah, it
proves your academic quality, and there's the essays and all the other aspects of it. But just knowing that schools want you as much as you want them sometimes, and that you can be yourself, and there is a school for you out there. And as you mentioned, choosing the school that suits you the admissions committee are going to see that as well.
I frequently, absolutely. I frequently talk about the need to fit in and stand out. The applicant has to fit in at the target schools, and has to do with academic ability, showing that you can do the work, has to do with having a goal that the school can support, which we discussed earlier. It has to do with showing an identification with a school's values. So you just mentioned the school that's very highly ranked, but it really wants, global strivers, people who, you know, and that has to do with the applicant's understanding the school's values and focus and direction at this point in time. And then the applicant has to stand out in the applicant pool. So they're going to add to it as an individual. They're going to bring something to the table that Joe down the block or in the next file is not going to do. So again, that has to do with being an individual. A lot of times I get something like, I'm told, you know, I'm an Indian engineer, or I'm a consultant, a management consultant, or I'm an investment banker in New York. And, you know, and there's a lot of people like me. And I'll say, you, like every other applicant, has a job to make yourself into a group of one, because we're all individuals. I can remember in 25 years, I can remember exactly one applicant who did not have a story to tell. And I've talked to thousands. And I think she just had a story. She just didn't want to tell it. So, you know, the applicants need to be prepared to do those things I just outlined, the things that we've discussed, that you've highlighted. And I think authenticity, which is what you're touching on, and that human story is just a really, really big part of it. What would you have liked me to ask you?
Oh, I'm not so sure if I'd have liked you to ask me, but I thought you might ask me as an admissions consultant if I was considering an MBA.
I thought of that as we were talking. Yeah.
Well, if anyone wants to finance my MBA, I'd be very happy to do one.
Well, if you apply, you might find that there would be.
That's true. It's cool. I mean, writing so much about the industry and seeing all the benefits it can bring, it certainly piques your interest in it. And, you know, I feel like I've said so much about it that really I should do one by now. But...
Probably know how to get in.
It's a fantastic program. Can do so much for you. Obviously, cost is always an issue. Yeah. I love my job, so you know, you'd look into flexible options. But it's interesting. People from liberal arts backgrounds like myself, sometimes it's hard to see how an MBA would fit your career direction. But as you progress and management becomes more important, you can really see those skills becoming more and more important. So certainly something I consider in the future. Obviously, I'm very happy for any benefactors listening to come to my aid.
You know, there two thoughts are coming through my mind as you're talking now. One is, there was a fellow, and you probably know him from the UK. He was a journalist, and he went to Harvard. I'm forgetting his name right now. I have his book. I think it's Above the Curtain. Something like that. Above, right. I think his book was a mixed review of the experience. Let's put it that way. But it was an interesting book. The other thought that occurred to me is, one of the realities of B school education is that it's countercyclical. Mm-hmm. So when employment is high and the job market's booming, there are fewer people who want to go get an MBA. This has been consistent. Whether it was the 2000.com bust or the 2008 recession, that's when application volume soars. Yeah. When the economy is doing great, people tend to say, I have a great job that I love. I don't want to go for an MBA right now. So that was one trend we didn't touch on, but it's interesting that it's similar to your hesitation for going for the MBA. So anyways, Marco, I want to thank you. We're just about finished. It's been absolutely delightful talking to you and hearing your perspective. You have such a wonderful perspective on the B-School scene. So thank you very much for joining me and sharing your insight and perspective with our listeners. Where can listeners find Business Because and the B-School question? One more time. I know you told us before.
businessbecause.com. And the Business School question, available on iTunes and the Business Because website.
Okay. We're going to link to Business Because and the Business School question from the show notes at exhibit.com/317. Listener, thank you too for joining Marco De Novellis and me for Admission Straight Talk's 317th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please subscribe. Don't miss any upcoming shows, be they with successful writers, admissions directors, test prep pros, or fascinating alumni doing great things. And here's a reminder, you can register for Get Accepted to Stanford Graduate School of Business, which I will present twice on Wednesday, June 12th. Reserve your spot at www.accepted.com/317download. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.